So the title I have for the sermon today is The Faith of Isaac. The Faith of Isaac. Hebrews chapter 11 is known as the faith chapter, and several heroes of faith are listed in that chapter. And in that list appears Abraham's son, Isaac. If you turn, please, to Hebrews 11 and verse 20. Hebrews 11 and verse 20. While you're turning there, let me remind you that Isaac actually lives for 180 years, 5 years longer than his father Abraham had lived. He went through quite a bit, as we'll see, in those 180 years. Yet in the faith chapter, he is specifically commended for only one action, right? One day out of 180 years gets him in the faith chapter. If we see here in verse 20, by faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. Period. Now, at first, that seems odd that the blessing of Jacob and Esau would be the one event in his long life that's emphasized in the faith chapter. After all, that event was laden with favoritism, lying, and deception. So today my goal is to examine with you the life of Isaac in order to answer the question of why Isaac was worthy of mention as a hero of faith in Hebrews chapter 11. Now, of course, we know that the birth of Isaac had been a miraculous event. He was born to Sarah by God's direct intervention. Sarah was 90 years old when Isaac was born, and Abraham was 100. So the birth of Isaac presents lessons regarding the faith of Abraham and Sarah, but it does not specifically relate to Isaac's faith. He didn't have a whole lot to do with that, right? So the first time in scriptures that we see Isaac acting by faith is at the incident of his impending sacrifice by Abraham. Let's go to Genesis 22. Genesis 22, and we'll look at verses 3 through 13. We see here that God had commanded Abraham to take Isaac to the land of Moriah, that would be the vicinity of Jerusalem, and to offer him up as a sacrifice. Now, of course, this seems bizarre to us, but the Canaanites among whom Abraham lived did engage in human sacrifice rituals. And of course, God did not intend to allow Abraham to actually kill Isaac. Genesis 22 and verse 3. So Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Then on the third day, Abraham lifted his eyes and saw the place afar off. And Abraham said to his young men, now I want to pause here for a moment. The phrase here for young men is nahar, N-A-H-A-R in Hebrew. Stay here with the donkey. The lad, referring to Isaac, is also referred to with the word nahar. So in one place that word is translated as young men, and in the next place in English it's translated as the lad. But it's the same word. And I will go yonder and worship, and we will come back to you. Now, it would be interesting to know how old Isaac was when he was taken to Moriah. Some have speculated in the church that maybe he was 33 years old, the same age that Jesus was when he was crucified. However, that is actually never stated in Scripture. It's a conjecture, but it's not found in the Scriptures. The word lad here is used in the King James and in the New King James translations, but that Hebrew word is used 221 times in the Old Testament. It can be translated as infant or child or young man or servant, and it's used for all of those contexts. Now, interestingly, as I said, the two young men whom Abraham brought with Isaac are referred to with that same word. So it would be quite appropriate to think of Isaac as a young man by this point, rather than a child. In Genesis, you don't have to turn there, but in Genesis 37:2, Joseph is also referred to by that same word, Nahar, but the same verse says he's 17 years old. Right? So at 17, are you a lad? Are you a young man? Right? It's somewhere in that vicinity. So back to Genesis 22 in verse 6. So Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac, his son. And he took the fire in his hand and a knife, and the two of them went together. So again, Isaac is apparently a young man here, not a child, because quite a bit of wood would be required for a sacrifice. And Abraham laid it on Isaac's back, symbolizing the cross or the stake that Jesus Christ would bear on the way to his crucifixion. So a child could not have borne such a heavy weight. Verse 7. But Isaac spoke to Abraham, his father, and said, "My father." And he said, "Here I am, my son." Then he said, "Look, the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for a burnt offering?" And Abraham said, "My son, God will provide for himself the lamb for a burnt offering." So the two of them went together. Now, the point of knowing that Isaac was a young man is that he was old enough to understand what was happening. And he would have been strong enough to defy his father, to resist being sacrificed, and to run for his life, had he chosen to do so. Verse 9. Then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built an altar there and placed the wood in order. And he bound Isaac, his son, and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Now here we see the first act of faith that we can attribute to Isaac. We usually focus here on Abraham's faith in offering up his son. But Isaac had to have a tremendous amount of faith as well. He never questions his father's actions. He willingly submits to whatever his father needs to be accomplished. And of course, this is a foreshadowing of Christ's submission to God the Father. Isaac, no doubt, by this point in his life, had witnessed many animal sacrifices. He knew how an animal would be bound for sacrifice, that it would then be killed and bled and then burned. Yet while Abraham begins tying his hands and feet, Isaac does not resist. He doesn't fight. He doesn't run away. He trusts that Abraham is God's servant, and that if it is God's will that he should die, he is willing to submit to that command. Verse 10, and Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, "Abraham, Abraham." So he said, "Here I am." And he said, "Do not lay your hand on the lad or do anything to him, for now I know that you fear me, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me." Then Abraham lifted his eyes and looked, and there behind him was a ram caught in a thicket by its horns. So Abraham went and took the ram and offered it up as a burnt offering instead of his son. Now let's move ahead to Genesis 24. Genesis 24. Here we see that Abraham, who knew very well the characteristics and practices of the Canaanites among whom he lived, was insistent that Isaac should not marry a Canaanite woman. We'll pick it up in verse 1, Genesis 24, verse 1. Now Abraham was old, well advanced in age, and the Lord had blessed Abraham in all things. So Abraham said to the oldest servant of his house, who ruled over all that he had, "Please put your hand under my thigh." He's about to initiate a ritual. "And I will make you swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but you shall go to my country and to my family and take a wife for my son Isaac. Now, after this, Abraham sent his servant, many believe it may have been Eliezer of Damascus, to Padan Aram. That would be northern Syria or southern Turkey today. Let's skip down to verse 61. We see in this story that Isaac's relative Rebekah is located, and she agrees to come with the servant to become Isaac's bride. Sight unseen for both of them. Genesis 24:61. Then Rebekah and her maids arose. So they've made this journey now to go and meet Isaac. And they rode on the camels and followed the man. So the servant took Rebekah and departed. Now Isaac came from the way of Beer Lahai Roi, for he dwelt in the south. Now this is going to be a significant point, I think. Isaac is living near a well, and the well's name is the Living One Who Sees. The Living One Who Sees. This is the same place where Abraham's concubine Hagar cried out to God for the life of her son Ishmael. God heard her plea and saw Ishmael's distress and then intervened. The same well. Remember the name of the well. The Living One Who Sees. Verse 63. And Isaac went out to meditate in the field in the evening. And he lifted his eyes and looked, and there the camels were coming. So Isaac, we see, is a man who meditates, probably praying, meditating on a regular basis. What is he meditating about on this particular instance? What is he looking for? He's been awaiting Abraham's servant to return. He's looking for the camel caravan to arrive, and now he sees it. Isaac sees God's will playing out in his life. Verse 64, then Rebekah lifted her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she dismounted from her camel, for she had said to the servant, "Who is this man walking in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "It is my master." So she took a veil and covered herself. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent, and he took Rebekah, and she became his wife, and he loved her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. So Isaac here accepts the bride whom God had chosen for him. He accepted God's will and submitted to it. She became his wife, and he grew to love her. Let's skip down to chapter 25 and verse 7. Genesis 25, starting in verse 7. This is the sum of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 175 years. So we know that Abraham was 100 years old when Isaac was born. So if he lives to be 175 years, then Isaac is now 75 when Abraham dies. Then Abraham breathed his last and died in a good old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. And his sons, Isaac and Ishmael, who'd apparently come back from Arabia for the funeral, Isaac and Ishmael buried him in the cave of Machpelah, which is before Mamre, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zoar the Hittite, the field which Abraham purchased from the sons of Heth. There Abraham was buried, and Sarah his wife. She'd been buried there already. Verse 11, and it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed his son Isaac. And Isaac dwelt at Beer Lahai Roi. Where did he go to live? the well of the living one who sees. That's a reference to God. So it appears that from the time that he was 40 years old until the time that he was 75, his residence was in that area around the well of the living one who sees. Let's skip to verse 20. Now we come to the next great test of Isaac's faith, waiting for a child. This occurred while Abraham was still alive, right? So it's a little flashback here. Genesis 25 and verse 20. Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah as wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. Now notice that Isaac honored the wish of his father and mother. He had not married a Canaanite woman. He had waited. He was 40 years old and unmarried, trusting that God would provide the right wife for him at the right time. Verse 21. Now Isaac pleaded with the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his plea, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Now this sounds like it happened pretty quickly. But as we'll see in a few minutes, they were waiting for a child for nearly 20 years. Did Isaac not pray about this until 19 years into the marriage? Or had this been something he had prayed persistently about, meditated over, for nearly two decades? After all, we know that Isaac meditated. It seems likely that he and Rebekah would have been praying for a child since the marriage began. That's a long time to wait. Verse 22. But the children struggled together within her, and she said, if all is well, why am I like this? Why am I going through this? So she went to inquire of the Lord. And the Lord said to her, so God now speaks directly to her, two nations are in your womb. Two people shall be separated from your body. One people shall be stronger than the other, and the older shall serve the younger. So this is a prophecy. God spoke personally to Rebekah about this issue. We are not told if Isaac was present when God spoke to her, but it would be very strange if Rebekah did not tell her husband that God had spoken this to her. It would be very strange if she did not relay the prophecy to Isaac about the older child growing up to serve the younger. He must have known this prophecy. Verse 24. So when her days were fulfilled for her to give birth, indeed there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red. He was like a hairy garment all over. So they called him Esau. Afterward, his brother came out, and his hand took hold of Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob, usurper. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. So the 20 years have passed. He's now 60. Now, since Isaac is 60 and Abraham died when Isaac was 75, it's probable that Abraham would have known Jacob and Esau, who would have been about 15 years old when Abraham died. Verse 27, so the boys grew, and Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, but Jacob was a mild man, dwelling in tents. And Isaac loved Esau because he ate of his game. But Rebekah loved Jacob. So we see trouble brewing in paradise here. Favoritism among the children. Let's keep your place in Genesis, please, but I'd like us to turn to Malachi chapter 1, and we'll look at verses 2 through 3. Malachi chapter 1. Because we're going to see here the first time in the story of Isaac an incident where he attempts to place his own will ahead of God's will. He gives preference in his parental affection to Esau. it never states that he loved Jacob. Of the two boys, Jacob is not the one Isaac would have chosen to receive the greatest blessing. But let's notice what it says in Malachi 1, verses 2 and 3. I have loved you, says the Lord, yet you say, in what way have you loved us? Was not Esau Jacob's brother, says the Lord? Yet Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated, and laid waste his mountains and his heritage for the jackals of the wilderness. So Isaac was a man of faith in God, but he had begun to rely on his own vision, a vision of what the future should look like in his mind, rather than rely on supporting God's decision. And God loved Jacob more than Esau. In fact, God saw in Esau some character traits he actually hated. Let's go also to Romans 9. Romans 9. Look at verses 9 through 16 before we go back to Genesis. Romans 9, starting in verse 9. Here the Apostle Paul speaks about this same topic to the church at Rome. Romans 9 and verse 9. For this is the word of promise. At this time I will come, and Sarah shall have a son. And not only this, but when Rebekah also had conceived by one man, even by our father Isaac, for the children not yet being born, nor having done any good or evil, that the purpose of God according to election might stand, not of works, but of him who calls. It was said to her, the older shall serve the younger. As it is written, Jacob I have loved, but Esau I have hated. What shall we say then? Is there unrighteousness with God? Certainly not. For he says to Moses, I will have mercy on whomever I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whomever I will have compassion. So then it is not of him who wills, nor of him who runs, but of God who shows mercy. In other words, the election or choice of which son should receive the birthright and the inheritance promised to Abraham was God's to make, not Isaac's choice. Now let's go back to Genesis. We'll pick it up in chapter 26. Genesis 26. Because here we find another incident where Isaac's faith in God would be tested. We'll start in verse 1 of Genesis 26. Now there was a famine in the land, besides the first famine that was in the days of Abraham. And Isaac went to Abimelech, king of the Philistines, in Gerar. Now a lot of biblical commentators will look at this and they'll say, well, this is clearly a mistake, right? We already know the story of Abraham and Sarah going to stay with Abimelech. And this was probably just copied in the wrong place, and, you know, it couldn't have happened twice. It's too bizarre to have happened twice. Well, this is specifically telling us this was a different famine, and this was in the days of Isaac. The other one was in the days of Abraham. Now, Abimelech the king is not the same person. Abimelech is a title. It's like saying, and the Pharaoh, right? Doesn't mean every time Pharaoh is mentioned in the Bible, it's the same man. So Abimelech is a title. Verse 2, then the Lord appeared to him and said, do not go down to Egypt. Live in the land of which I shall tell you. So due to the famine, Isaac had now chosen to depart from Beer Lahai Roi, the well of the living one who sees. He'd left it behind. Instead of trusting fully in the God who sees the future and brings his will to pass, Isaac, just as Abraham had done, now tries to take matters into his own hands to pursue his own vision. But God intervenes and stops Isaac's journey at Gerar in the land of the Philistines, right? What does this mean? Apparently, Isaac's intention was to pass through the land of the Philistines and head on to Egypt. But God specifically tells him not to do it, to stay in the land of Canaan and the Philistines. And to his credit, Isaac obeys God's command. He does exactly as God tells him. He doesn't go to Egypt. Verse 3, dwell in this land. So he's giving him permission now to dwell there, where he's at. And I will be with you and bless you. For to you and your descendants I will give all these lands, and I will perform the oath which I swore to Abraham your father. And I will make your descendants multiply as the stars of heaven. I will give to your descendants all these lands, and in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed. Because Abraham obeyed, past tense, my voice, and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws. Now it's interesting that God does not tell Isaac that he will receive these blessings because of anything Isaac has done. He and his descendants will be blessed because of his father Abraham's obedience. Isaac's life was still going on. Abraham's life was finished. Only at the end of one's lifetime does God know for sure if someone has been faithful and obedient to him to the end. And as we shall see, Isaac still had some lessons in faith he needed to learn. Verse 6, so Isaac dwelt in Gerar. So far, so good. But then there's verse 7. And the men of the place asked about his wife. And he said, she's my sister. For he was afraid to say, she is my wife. Because he thought, lest the men of the place kill me for Rebekah, because she is beautiful to behold. So this goes down exactly the same way as with Abraham and Sarah. And maybe he'd heard that story, right, growing up. And it came to his mind, maybe I could try this too. Now, God had just spoken to Isaac. He had just spoken to him and told him he was going to be blessed, that he would live in the land, and that he would have many descendants. Yet in the company of the Philistines, he's suddenly afraid for his own life. Verse 8. Now it came to pass when he'd been there a long time that Abimelech, king of the Philistines, looked through a window and saw, and there was Isaac showing endearment to Rebekah, his wife. Then Abimelech called Isaac and said, quite obviously she is your wife. So how could you say she is my sister? And Isaac said to him, because I said, lest I die on account of her. Now, at least Abraham had a better story, because Sarah really was his sister, a half-sister. In this case, not true. Cousin, okay, but not a sister. And Abimelech said, what is this you have done to us? One of the people might soon have lain with your wife, and you would have brought guilt on us. So Abimelech charged all his people, saying, he who touches this man or his wife shall surely be put to death. Then Isaac sowed in the land. He starts being a farmer. And reaped in the same year 100-fold. Now that's a pretty good increase. 100-fold increase for farming. And the Lord blessed him. The man began to prosper and continued prospering until he became very prosperous or exceedingly rich. For he had possessions of flocks and possessions of herds, and a great number of servants. So the Philistines envied him. Now the Philistines had stopped up all the wells which his father's servants had dug in the days of Abraham, his father, and they had filled them with earth. And Abimelech said to Isaac, go away from us, for you are much mightier than we. Now how could Isaac have become mightier than the Philistines in Gerar? Apparently, his wealth had increased dramatically, and he'd already been the heir of all that Abraham had left behind. Isaac most likely had many servants. We just read that. He has many servants who were loyal to him and who would fight to defend him and his possessions. to stick up for his interests. And this worried the Philistines. But now Isaac is told to go away. Get out of here. No longer welcome. And so he leaves. He did not argue with Abimelech. He simply moved on to avoid a conflict. Tries to be a peacemaker. Verse 17. Then Isaac departed from there and pitched his tent in the valley of Gerar and dwelt there. And Isaac dug again the wells of water which they had dug in the days of Abraham his father. He said, well, they filled up these wells, we'll dig them out again. For the Philistines had stopped them up after the death of Abraham. He called them by the names which his father had called them. Also, Isaac's servants dug in the valley and found a well of running water there. So this would have been a major undertaking. Redigging wells was very time-consuming and difficult work. And then, once it was all accomplished, and Isaac thought he'd made for himself a good place to settle down, he faced another test of faith. Verse 20. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen, saying, the water is ours. So he called the name of the well Esek, because they quarreled with him. Then they dug another well, and they quarreled over that one also, so he called its name Sitna. Now, notice, Isaac could have chosen to stand his ground and fight for his rights. Remember, the Philistines already recognized that he was more powerful. He could overpower them. He could have gone to war with the Philistines. Instead, he moves on, trusting that God would lead him to the proper place to make his home. He pursues peace. Verse 22. And he moved from there and dug another well, and they did not quarrel over it. So he'd moved far enough away that Gerar felt, okay, that's all right. So he called its name Rehoboth, because he said, for now the Lord has made room for us, and we shall be fruitful in the land. Then he went up from there to Beersheba. So he's settled everybody down now at this place where the Lord has made room for them. So he's recognizing God has led them to this place. And he's willing to submit to God's decision. But then he takes a trip, right? He's not moving. He's taking a trip up to Beersheba. And the Lord appeared to him the same night and said, I am the God of your father Abraham. Do not fear, for I am with you. I will bless you and multiply your descendants for my servant Abraham's sake. Now, Isaac now seemingly is devoted to obeying God's will. He learned from the incident with Rebekah and Abimelech that God really is looking out for him and that he needs to trust in God's vision of the future and to not trust his own vision. So he built an altar there and called on the name of the Lord, and he pitched his tent there, and there Isaac's servants dug a well. Then Abimelech came to him from Gerar with Ahuzath, one of his friends, and Phicol, the commander of his army. And Isaac said to them, why have you come to me? Since you hate me and have sent me away from you, I think I got evicted. But they said, we have certainly seen that the Lord is with you. So we said, let there now be an oath between us, between you and us, and let us make a covenant with you, that you will do us no harm, since we have not touched you, and since we have done nothing to you but good, and have sent you away in peace. You are now the blessed of the Lord. See, remember the Philistines knew Abraham. Now what's basically going on here is they're saying, look, we recognize that you are the heir of Abraham, that God is blessing you in the same way that God had blessed Abraham. You are the successor. Verse 30, so he made them a feast, and they ate and drank. Then they arose in the morning and swore an oath with one another, and Isaac sent them away, and they departed from him in peace. It came to pass that same day that Isaac's servants came and told him about the well which they had dug and said to him, "We have found water." So he called it Sheba. Therefore, the name of the city is Beersheba to this day. Verse 34. When Esau was 40 years old, so at this point, right, if Esau, his son, is 40 years old, Isaac is then 100. And Jacob is also 40, because the boys were twins. When Esau was 40 years old, he took as wives Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Basemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. And they were a grief of mind to Isaac and Rebekah. So keep that in mind. They're not happy about this marriage arrangement. Let's go into Genesis 27. We're going to skip ahead significantly here in the life of Isaac. Genesis 27, verse 1. Now it came to pass when Isaac was old. Okay, so he was already 100 when Esau took these wives. But now he's old. Okay? Now he's getting up there. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so dim that he could not see, that he called Esau, his older son, and said to him, "My son." And he answered him, "Here I am." Then he said, "Behold, now I am old. I do not know the day of my death." Could be any minute. Now, various commentaries here place the age of Isaac at this point as perhaps 137 years old. If correct, that would make Jacob and Esau 77. Now, we often think of Jacob going off to work for Laban as being a young man in search of a bride, but Jacob is likely in his 70s at that point. Even the lowest estimate puts him at 57 in terms of the chronology and what has to happen in the years between his journey and his return. Verse 3, "Now therefore, please take your weapons, your quiver, and your bow, and go out to the field and hunt game for me, and make me savory food, which I love, and bring it to me that I may eat, that my soul may bless you before I die." Now notice, he wants to bless Esau. "Now Rebekah was listening when Isaac spoke to Esau his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game and to bring it. So Rebekah spoke to Jacob her son, saying, 'Indeed, I heard your father speak to Esau your brother, saying, bring me game and make savory food for me, that I may eat it and bless you in the presence of the Lord before my death. Now therefore, my son, obey my voice according to what I command you.'" Now, had Isaac forgotten what God had told Rebekah? The prophecy that the older son, Esau, would serve the younger, Jacob? He is an old man. So either he had forgotten, or more likely, he had decided he didn't care. He preferred Esau over Jacob and was preparing to give the greater blessing to Esau. Now, it's worth noting that Isaac is now blind. The man who had meditated in the field and lifted his eyes to see his promised bride coming over the horizon, God's gift to him, now couldn't see at all. The man who dwelled for over 35 years near the well of the living one who sees, now could not himself see. This must have been a tremendous trial for Isaac. He had to rely upon his wife and sons and servants for everything in his old age. And none of us likes to give up control. Now, of course, we know how that blessing unfolded. Rebekah convinced Jacob to deceive Isaac, to impersonate Esau, and to receive the greater blessing. Let's skip ahead to verse 28. Genesis 27:28. this is the blessing that Isaac pronounced upon Jacob here, actually thinking it was Esau. Therefore, may God give you of the dew of heaven, of the fatness of the earth, and plenty of grain and wine. Let peoples serve you, and nations bow down to you. Be master over your brethren, and let your mother's sons bow down to you. Cursed be everyone who curses you, and blessed be those who bless you. Now it happened as soon as Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and Jacob had scarcely gone out from the presence of Isaac his father, that Esau his brother came in from his hunting. He also had made savory food and brought it to his father and said to his father, "Let my father arise and eat of his son's game, that your soul may bless me." And his father Isaac said to him, "Who are you?" So he said, "I am your son, your firstborn, Esau." Then Isaac trembled exceedingly. He's shaking at this point. And said, "Who? Where is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? I ate all of it before you came, and I have blessed him. And indeed he shall be blessed. There's no undoing that." Now, why did Isaac tremble? Was he just upset or outraged that his wife would work behind his back to deceive him and that his son would lie to him? Well, let's go to Genesis 31, and we'll look at verses 51 to 53. Genesis 31, because in the story, this is going to be 20 years later. At this point, in Genesis 31, Jacob now has four wives, and all his children have been born except for Benjamin. Genesis 31, 51. Then Laban said to Jacob, "Here is this heap, and here is this pillar, which I have placed between you and me. This heap is a witness, and this pillar is a witness, that I will not pass beyond this heap to you, and you will not pass beyond this heap a pillar to me for harm. The God of Abraham, the God of Nahor, and the God of their father judge between us." And Jacob swore by the fear of his father Isaac. Now, last year I gave a sermon entitled "The Fear of Isaac," and it was based on this verse. Jacob understood that his father truly feared God. Now, when we fear God, we acknowledge that we are his servants and that we owe God our full obedience. Yet in the incident of Isaac's deception in Genesis 27, Isaac trembles exceedingly by what has occurred. Why? Isaac must have recognized that he was truly blind. Not only physically, but spiritually at that moment. He had not trusted fully in the living one who sees. He tried to pursue his own vision of what should happen regarding his sons. But now he's faced with God's direct intervention to countermand his will. God's will regarding Jacob and Esau would prevail no matter what he tried to do. Yes, he had been deceived by his wife and son, but Isaac now understood that he had also been at fault in this incident. He had tried to fool God. He had tried to circumvent God's will, and God had called him on it in the most dramatic way. Let's continue back to Genesis 28. Genesis 28, verse 1. Isaac's had a wake-up call. Genesis 28, verse 1. Then Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, "You shall not take a wife from the daughters of Canaan. arise, go to Padan Aram, to the house of Bethuel, your mother's father, and take yourself a wife from there of the daughters of Laban, your mother's brother. May God Almighty bless you and make you fruitful and multiply you, that you may be an assembly of peoples, and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your descendants with you. He's making it very clear. Are you listening, God? Here's the blessing. That you may inherit the land in which you are a stranger, which God gave to Abraham. See, Isaac had learned his lesson, and he intended to correct his fault. This blessing of Jacob is not going to involve deception. Now he speaks directly to Jacob, and he knows it's Jacob, and he bestows upon him the blessing God had intended in the first place. Remember what we had read in Hebrews 11:20? By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. Isaac had now submitted to God's will and blessed Jacob properly and restated the prophecy that God had given to Abraham about his descendants inheriting the land. Now let's skip ahead to Genesis 35. Genesis 35, and look at verses 27 to 29. Genesis 35. We know that after Jacob returned from Padan Aram, after being gone for 20 years, he finally came to see his father again. That's a long time to be away. And he wants to come and see Isaac. Verse 27. Then Jacob came to his father Isaac at Mamre, or Kirjath Arba, that is Hebron, where Abraham and Isaac had dwelt. Now the days of Isaac were 180 years. Now it doesn't mean that he was 180 years when Jacob comes to see him. We'll see that some time passes here. But now they're just simply going to the end of Isaac's story and saying, he dies at 180 years. So Isaac breathed his last and died and was gathered to his people, being old and full of days. And his sons Esau and Jacob buried him. Now, Jacob and Esau would each have been 120 years old at this point. But they had come together to bury their father. So there was apparently some lasting reconciliation. Isaac was old and full of days. And we are to presume, because it doesn't tell us otherwise, that he had now, at the point of his death, been blind for over 40 years. So did he remain a man of faith during those four decades? As a man who could no longer see, did he place his trust and confidence in the living one who sees and brings about his will? Jesus Christ declared the following in Matthew 8, verse 11. And I say to you that many will come from the east and west and sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven. See, Jesus himself stated definitively that Isaac would be present in the kingdom of God. Let's conclude by turning to Hebrews 11 again, but this time verse 13. Hebrews 11, verse 13. Like all of us, Isaac was a human being. He had times where he exhibited great faith in God and obedience to God's will, and times when he faltered, and God had to correct him, and he did. Yet in the end, God recorded the name of Isaac in his book of life. Though he could no longer see with his own eyes, Isaac committed the remainder of his life to trusting in God's perfect vision. and Isaac now awaits the perfect fulfillment of that vision. Hebrews 11:13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth.